It's January. You really want to sit and listen to a Christmas podcast? You're not even there, are you? It's just me in my room with my cat. You all right, cat? He's licking his bollocks. Okay, look, well, I'm going to do it anyway, so just play the theme music and we'll do this thing.
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this? What's this?
Well, says team, a trusty old Red Rider carbine action 2 on the shot range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Pod. Cast with your host Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people. Is it too late for me to wish you a happy new year? If it is, I don't care. Happy new year. So good for all two of you. Two of you, is that it? Two, we're down to two. Oh, thanks. So good for both of you to turn up. The numbers in December skyrocketed up to five. Yeah, we had five listeners. That was a good show, that one. Yeah, clearly there's just two of you at the moment, but thanks for coming. Appreciate having you both here. Yeah, a few things to cover actually, because I haven't been on it for a while. I want to start by saying, right, you know, it's not that long till Christmas, because we're at the end of January already. Okay, so we got that out of the way, and Christmas really starts in December. For some people it starts, you know, straight after October, so really it's only like, you know, sort of nine more months to go till the end of October, another month till the end of November, and then bang, you're opening your advent calendar again. So don't panic that it's so far from Christmas, you know. Let's not worry about that too much. Plus, I'll be here all year round, so you've got a little dose of Christmas when you want it every couple of weeks. So I want to say a big thank you to my US correspondent, Scott Newman. He sent through this massive box of Christmas sweets for the girls, for Robin and Juno, and they loved it. Yeah, there's loads in there, all sorts of different stuff. And plus, there's a few things in there that they don't like that I do like. So I win as well. So thank you so much for that, Scott. And it's all Christmas-themed stuff. So, you know, it's like Reese's Christmas tree things or marshmallows in the shape of snowmen and stuff like that. So, yeah, I've already emailed him to say thank you, but I wanted to mention it on air as well. So thank you so much, Scott. Scott, don't forget, is the host of Tinsel Tunes and also Christmas Morning Podcast. It still goes all through the year, Christmas Morning does, so check that out. And do you know what? I'm going to play for you the thank you message. I recorded the video. This is the audio from the video that I sent to Scott from the girls. Here it comes.
Hello, Scott. Thank you to you, your lovely wife, and Emma for those lovely sweets. We love them. And we're going to eat them from our mouths and poo them out of our bums. Thank you, and bye.
There you go. They're a pair of classy ladies, aren't they? Just another thing, I want to talk about my Christmas. I had a wonderful time this year, and I just want to say that the things my wife got me were fantastic. She got me a little figurine of Charlie Brown to hang on a Christmas tree. He's holding his Christmas tree. She bought me another Christmas quiz book, so that's something for us all to look forward to. And also another gift, which I will discuss later in the show, but she knows my love of Christmas, and yeah, she got me some nice Christmas things. Generally, it was just a nice family Christmas, and I had a wonderful time, and I hope you and yours did as well. So just before we get into the show, another thing I want to talk about, in case you're interested, you're probably not, but I'm just going to give you an update anyway. My book, which I'm going to stop plugging as frequently as I was, I'm not going to keep going on about it. My book, Thursday Night's Alright by Jack Andrews, only available on Kindle. I sold 11 copies, which isn't many, and I wasn't expecting to sell many because I haven't tried to advertise it anywhere at all. It's literally, I put it up there and I talked about it on the podcast. Bearing in mind, I only had five listeners at Christmas. That's not bad that I sold 11 copies and I've got one review. So that's nice. If you're one of those 11 people, please email me and let me know what you thought of it. Also, the merchandise, I sold a few bits. We sold a few bits because you can buy all sorts, you know. There's four different images you can choose from to have, like, on a t-shirt, but you can have it on so many different things. You can have a sticker, a t-shirt, I don't know, coffee cup, tea towel. I don't know if you can have a tea towel. Loads of stuff. Anyway, it's on TeePublic. If you want to check it out, just search Total Christmas. And I don't know if you remember, but I was going to give all the profit that I received, which is a very small cut, actually, from like a t-shirt that costs, I don't know, I think it's all in dollars, $20, I think I get about 10%, so I get $2 per t-shirt. But I got $40, and I gave that, like I said I would, to Children in Need, which is a charity in the UK that looks after children. I was thinking maybe next year, because most of my listeners are overseas, I was thinking maybe next year I'd give the money to Save the Children, so we'll see. But, you know, any merchandise that does sell between now and next Christmas, any money that I get from that will be going to that charity. But I just thought I'd give you an update, thought you might be interested. And you're there going, I'm not interested, Jack. That's not why I listen to your show. The reason why I listen to your show, actually, I don't know why I listen to your show. I'm turning off now. Don't turn off, because I've got stuff coming up. I've got Christmas stuff coming up. I know you're not interested, and that's fine. I just thought there might be people out there that are interested. I don't know. Another thing, actually, just before I get onto the Christmas stuff, the whole idea of this podcast is I do about 25 episodes a year, and then if you start listening on the 1st of December, you've got one a day to listen to up to Christmas. That's how it goes. To be honest, I don't think anyone actually does it that way. But if you are doing it that way, then, you know, happy December. This is the 1st of December. This is the first day of your advent calendar. Hope you've got a nice chocolate behind that door. Yeah, I just thought I'd mention that because, you know, this is episode one of the new year and also meant to be the first day of December. What you might want to do, if you're a super fan, is listen to the episodes again. Do you know what? I won't lie to you. Sometimes when I'm at work, I think, I might listen to an old episode of my podcast. And I do, and I forget how funny they were, how brilliant they were, what works of art they were. Not all of them. Sometimes I think how boring they were. But that happens, you know. Shall I just get on with the show? Because I've got a nice one to start us off. Here it comes.
Jingle, jingle, jingle for a segment.
Now, I don't really know what jingle to play for this bit, because it's a lovely story about Christmas, but it's not how someone found out the truth about Santa. It's not a story of shame. It's just a wonderful Christmas story. It was sent in by the lovely Tracy Dawson, and I'm going to play it for you right now.
Hello, Jack. This is Tracy from Ohio in the United States. I sent this story to you in an email on your Total Christmas Podcast website. However, I started listening more closely to the show and realized that you preferred to have audio versions of stories. So here it goes. When my daughter was 6 years old, she came to me and her bonus dad and told us that she planned to ask Santa Claus for a flying carpet. She explained that she knew Santa Claus was the only one who could create such a magical vehicle, and if she didn't get it, she would know Santa Claus wasn't real. Her bonus dad and I were beside ourselves. We couldn't let our little girl stop believing in the magic of the holidays so early in her life. So we concocted a plan. I went to the local home decorating store and bought a entryway rug that looked rather exotic and had tassels on the end. We wrapped it up and attached a certificate. On Christmas morning, she opened her gift and was thrilled. And then her sister started reading the certificate. The certificate said, "This flying carpet was made specifically for Casey. The flying carpet will only work for Casey. In the state of Ohio, you're not permitted to fly flying carpets until you reach the age of 16, which is the legal age for getting a driver's license in the state of Ohio." After her sister finished reading the story, the certificate, she burst into tears. Her bonus dad and I thought we had failed. But later on that day, I was walking down the hallway and saw her door ajar. I peeked into her bedroom, and sitting there on the floor was my little girl, scooting her bum on the flying carpet to try to get it to work. We have kept that carpet through all the years, now that she herself is a mom. She steps on that carpet every time she enters my bonus husband's door. I hope you enjoyed my story. Have a nice day.
That is a genius plan. You've got to be so impressed with that. It's not just like, yeah, we'll get her a rug and tell her, oh, maybe the magic's gone. No, a certificate to say, yeah, you got the rug. It definitely flies, but not till you're 16. Excellent work, Tracy. Fantastic. Tracy is now the proud owner of one of my Christmas pickles. She sent me that story just before Christmas, so I sent her out the Christmas pickle. I know she's received it. She sent me a picture of it. She's very happy. If you want a Christmas pickle, then you gotta send me a story. If you don't send me a story, you ain't getting no Christmas pickle. No Christmas pickle for you. So again, I want to say a massive thank you to Tracy. Lovely story and very clever work. Well done, Tracy. That's the sort of thinking that keeps the dream alive. Well done. Now let's do this.
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
So Bob is still with us. You know, some people might have thought, oh, Christmas is coming, Bob's going to give up. No, not at all. Bob is here, and this is the first of his... He's got two segments, not the same as last year. So the first one is Do You Hear What I Hear, as you just heard by the jingle. The next segment is a little bit different. So here we have Do You Hear What I Hear, and I won't lie to you, kids, it's bollocks.
Happy New Year. I am so excited for the opportunities that lay ahead this new year. It is time for a fresh start. However, I do feel sorry for those people who have given up drinking for 2023. When they wake up in the morning, that's as good as they're gonna feel all year. So I'm surprised I haven't talked about the movie The Holiday on Do You Hear What I Hear. It is the perfect illustration of what we do, looking at the comparisons and differences on the continents. The movie takes place in both the US and England when two women from opposite sides of the Atlantic Ocean agree to switch houses during the Christmas season. Iris finds herself in a Los Angeles mansion, and Amanda ends up in an English country cottage in Surrey. Of course, there is some obvious fish out of water comedy. Oh look, they drive on the wrong side of the road in England. Or, how can it feel like Christmas in California when it's so warm? I mean, this is all very charming and rom-commy, but one piece of dialogue did get my attention. When Amanda calls Iris to see how things are going, it becomes a three-way conference call with Iris's brother Graham. Iris tries to put Amanda on hold to admonish her brother for sleeping with Amanda, but she keeps messing up and ends up berating Amanda instead. Iris is embarrassed, and finally, after several tries to put Amanda on hold, she responds with, "Oh, bollocks." And this is used to show how Irish is so British. Now, I know for our English listeners with sensitive ears that this is considered a UK swear word. A medium strength one from what I've learned. I also recognize that in 1977, a record store manager was prosecuted for obscenity for displaying the Sex Pistols album, Never Mind the Bollocks. However, it is hard for an American to understand the fuss, as we don't have bollocks in our vocabulary, or anything like it. It just sounds kind of funny. This can be especially confusing when you consider that bollocks is used in negative ways. It's a noun for blatant lies. It's a curse word when you make a mistake. Or it's an adjective to describe something useless. But then, if you add the, or top, or dogs to bollocks, it suddenly means the very best. Now, to add to the confusion, you can declare bollocks to this, or you can say I bollocks something up, or it may be a load of bollocks, or you just sweat your bollocks off. And now we get to the obscene part. The origin of the word means testicles. So I guess the closest US phrase we have is balls. Now, this may be said at times, but it is not commonly used as an insult or as a compliment. I know this may all seem a bit off the mark and not appropriate for a Christmas podcast. And yet, I do think for 2023, it is important that we understand each other, especially when it comes to such useful bad words as bollocks. Cheers and happy Christmas.
I'd love that segment. Because I love the word. I'll tell you a little story, actually. My brother told me this. This is when we were kids, so it would have been, oh, goodness me, over 30 years ago. He was in the queue, like, queuing up to get their work checked by their teacher at school, and there's, like, four kids lined up. He's just ticking off, you know, checking they've done it correct and that. And this other kid joined the queue, and the kid at the front was getting told off. And the kid that just joined the queue said to the next kid in the queue, my brother was about 30. This is hard to explain, but there's a queue. Except that there's a queue. Kid at the back says to the kid second from the back, "What's going on?" The kid at the second from the back goes, "Johnny Dennis is getting bollocked." The teacher heard it. He goes, "What did you say?" And actually, no, I think it was Johnny Dennis that said getting bollocked. Johnny Dennis was a character. I wonder what he's doing now. Anyway, yeah, that's... Whenever anyone says the word bollocked, I always think of that. Johnny Dennis getting told off for saying the word bollocked in maths. An interesting aside there. He mentioned that there was that case in 1977 about the Sex Pistols album being displayed in a Virgin store in London, and the album was called Nevermind the Bollocks, Here's the Sex Pistols. And it went to court, and Virgin Records won the case, because the word bollocks also can refer to a priest, apparently, back in the old days. It's worth looking up on Wikipedia if you're interested in it. It doesn't go into great detail. I'm sure you can find elsewhere on Google the full story. But yeah, but then interestingly, another chap was selling t-shirts saying bollocks to Blair, meaning Tony Blair, in the, I think it was the early 2000s, late 90s, and he got fined £80 for doing that. But yeah, so there you go, that's bollocks. Balls. Testicles. Let's do this. This is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz. Okay, boys and girls, it's the quiz, your favourite part of the show, and I bet some of you are thinking, oh, he's not doing the quiz still, is he? We're sick of the quiz. I'm thinking what's going to happen is, next episode, what I do is, I'm just going to do the 10 questions, I'm not going to hum the songs, because I'm running out of songs to hum, really. I'm sure I could find a load if I sat down and spent long enough on it, but I think I've done a few songs twice. I think I have. I don't want to go into it. I don't want to make a big thing about it, so we're not doing that anymore. But this week, I am still doing the songs, so if you're not familiar, I read out 10 questions and then I hum 5 songs and then I give you 10 answers and another 5 answers for the 5 songs. Very straightforward, actually. So are you ready? And I don't care if you're ready because I'm going to do it anyway, baby. Question number 1. Available from Harrods for Christmas 2022, what are Grosvenor Christmas at £100, Knightsbridge Christmas at £250, Boxing Day at £525, and Ultimate Christmas for £5,000. What are they? What is Harrods selling at that price? Question number 2. Mr. Hankey the Christmas Poo is the title of the 9th episode of the first series of which American animated television series? I think that's pretty easy, that one. Question number something. Which city, the official seat of the European Parliament, is famous for its annual Christmas market in and around Place Kleber and styles itself as the capital of Christmas? Eh? Do you know that? Because I didn't. Question number whatever. In 'Twas the Day After Christmas, the 1981 Christmas episode of which US sitcom does Colonel Potter introduce the British traditions of Boxing Day and orders officers and enlisted personnel to trade places for the day? Any ideas? Well, write it down then, or just remember it, whatever. Question number something. On the 26th of November 2008, Linus Urbanek of Sweden created a new Guinness World Record by eating 31 what in 1 minute using just a cocktail stick and only eating one at a time? What was he eating? What was it? Was it whole roast turkeys on the end of a cocktail stick? Of course it wasn't! But it was something. What was that something? Question number. Who were Danny Kaye and Bing Crosby's female co-stars in the film White Christmas? Who were they? Question number. What are we up to? I don't know. Christmas Island, the one in the Indian Ocean, is famous for the annual migration of what animal? What animal? It's a migration of animals. You heard the question. Question number. According to the Royal Family official website, who was the consort of George III who is thought to have introduced the Christmas tree to the royals and it was later popularised by Prince Albert? Whom, I ask you? Whom? Question number. This might be 9. Down to the last 2. So this is question number 9. Which was the first act to have 3 consecutive Christmas number 1 singles? What act was that? Tell me now. And finally, who plays the title role in the 2014 British comedy film Get Santa, which also starred Warwick Davis, Jodie Whittaker and Rafe Spall? Who plays Santa in Get Santa? Who? I'm asking you, and you're telling me. That's how it works. Okay, here come your 5 songs. So, this is the first one. That's all you're getting. Okay, second one. Okay, this is number 3. That's it. Okay, number three. That was easy. And this one's also easy. There you go. That was your five songs. Now let's get in with those answers. Okay, boys and girls, now you get to compete with Brian Earle of Christmas Past Podcast, and he assures me that he's got not just all 10 right, somehow he's managed to get 12 right out of 10, so goodness knows how he's managed that, plus all five songs and another song to boot. I don't know where that came from either, so you've got to try and beat 18 points today, kids. The first question was, available from Harrods for Christmas 2022, what are Grosvenor Christmas, which is £100, Knightsbridge Christmas at £250, Boxing Day, £525, and Ultimate Christmas for £5,000. What are they?
I was guessing that those are fancy tree toppers.
They're not, no. They're Christmas hampers. Is that something you have in the States?
Christmas, more and more, yes. We actually call them Christmas Eve boxes. They're to be given on Christmas Eve as sort of a care package, mostly for children to get them through the evening.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, so it's been a thing for a long time, actually. My wife got a decent one last year from her work. Yeah, and it's normally just high-end food that you wouldn't normally buy. £5,000. I'd be interested to know what's in that.
Caviar, I'd imagine.
So just a hamper full of caviar, yeah. Okay, question number two. This was an easy one. Mr. Hankey, the Christmas Pooh, is the title of the 9th episode of the first series of which American animated television series?
I'm going to guess that was South Park.
Was South Park. That was an easy one. Okay, number three. Which city, the official seat of the European Parliament, is famous for its annual Christmas market in and around Place Kleber and styles itself as the capital of Christmas?
Is it Nuremberg?
No, it's not.
No.
Do you want another guess?
Let's see. I'm blanking. Help me out.
Yeah, see, I thought it was Bruges because they have the big Christmas markets there. Mm-hmm. But it's actually Strasbourg. So there we go.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Strasbourg Cathedral being arguably the site of the very first official Christmas tree, too, so that makes sense.
Oh, is that right? I should have known that.
Yeah, the cathedral. Yeah.
Well, there you go, kids. So the capital of Christmas is Strasbourg. Okay, number something. In 'Twas the Day After Christmas, the 1981 Christmas episode of which US sitcom does Colonel Potter introduce the British traditions of Boxing Day and orders officers and enlisted personnel to trade places for the day?
Now, my first guess at this was McHale's Navy, but then you said 1981, so I had to second guess myself, so I don't know.
Oh, no, it is. I thought you had it when I asked you.
I thought I did too, and then I realized you said 81 because McHale's Navy was an older sitcom.
Oh, I see. I've not heard of that one. It was MASH, would you believe?
Oh, MASH. Okay.
Yeah.
My dad used to watch that, but I never did.
I watched a few episodes actually. Yeah, like in the 90s, they started repeating it in the UK, and I started watching it, and I did enjoy it. Yeah. Okay. So, question number something. On the 26th of November 2008. Linus Urbanek of Sweden created a new Guinness World Record by eating 31 what in 1 minute using just a cocktail stick, and he could only eat one at a time.
I wanted to say mince pies just because I would like to try to eat that many in 1 minute, but then I realized that is probably physically impossible.
Yeah.
Unless you swallow them whole.
Even if you swallow them whole, I couldn't see that happening.
Even if you swallow them, but that would be something fun to try. So the only other thing I could think of would be, sugar plums.
It was Brussels sprouts.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I reckon I could do that. 31 Brussels sprouts. That can't be hard, can it? If you boiled them up, they'd be quite soft in that.
They'd be whole Brussels sprouts? Because you typically cut them in half, so does that count as one or two Brussels sprouts?
We tend not to in the UK. We sort of score the bottom of them, and you have them whole normally.
Oh, okay.
Show me how big a Brussels sprout is to you. Show me.
A Brussels sprout? Oh, about the size of a walnut, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, it's about the same size as ours. Yeah, there you go. Okay, question number... who were Danny Kaye and Bing Crosby's female co-stars in the film White Christmas?
Yeah, this is I have seen the movie, but I didn't really pay attention to it. So I just put down two names of people who were famous during that era, Ginger Rogers and Donna Reed. And I know that neither of them.
But that Ginger Rogers, I think Ginger Rogers was, oh no, I was going to say.
She was in Holiday Inn.
Oh, she was in Holiday Inn. That's what I was going to say, yeah. No, it was Rosemary Clooney, George's auntie, and Vera Ellen.
Okay.
There you go, yeah. Okay. Christmas Island, the one in the Indian Ocean, is famous for the annual migration of what animal?
Yeah, I'm assuming it's a bird. It has to be a migratory or a butterfly.
It's not.
So it's neither of those.
No.
It's not an animal that flies?
No.
It's an animal that walks, swims?
Crawls, really. Yeah, they crawl across the island. It's quite insane.
Is it turtles?
No, it's not. It's crabs. These red crabs. Have you never seen the footage of it? And they're going in people's houses. The whole island is like... just covered, it seems, in these red crabs that they just go everywhere. David Attenborough did an episode on one of his wildlife shows back in the 90s, early 90s or 80s. And it's just, I remember, it still sticks in my head now, watching these crabs just, yeah, go everywhere. It was weird. They're like in all the gutters and drains. They're just like, yeah, getting run over in cars. And
I've seen almost everything David Attenborough has done. I love his stuff. But yeah, that's a surprise to me.
You got to look it up on YouTube. You as well, kids. Have a gander on it. Just put in red crab migration. It's quite insane to watch. Okay, the next one. According to the... You've got to get this one, because have you got any right yet? Have you got one? Have you only got one right?
Have
you come on my show?
Only one right. Yeah, I'm doing terribly.
Damn. I think I would have got two and a half. I'm giving myself half a point for Rosemary Clooney. Yeah, okay. According to the Royal Family official website, who was the consort of George III... who was thought to have introduced the Christmas tree to the royals and was later popularized by Prince Albert.
I want to say Princess Charlotte, who I know was a German princess.
No, it was Rosemary Clooney and Vera Ellen. Oh, no, sorry. No, you're right. It was Charlotte, Queen Charlotte. Yes. Well done. There you go. Yeah, I knew it was Charlotte.
The board. Would I have said
Charlotte or Queen? I don't know, but I knew her name was Charlotte. Well done. Okay. Which was the first act to have three consecutive Christmas number one singles?
I wanted to say Wham, but now I know that's not true. And then I wanted to say one of those English supergroups, you know, like Band Aid or what was the other one? I guess USA for Africa. That was an American one.
Mm.
So not knowing any other one that might fit the bill, I'm just going to say Paul McCartney.
Oh, so close. And I have another guess.
What was it, the Beatles?
It was the Beatles. It was, yeah. I'll give you half a point for that.
Well, what were the songs?
I don't know.
No.
I don't think any of them were Christmassy, though. They weren't Christmas songs. It's just the song that's number one over Christmas. I should maybe...
Ah, okay. That's
the cover.
Slightly different.
I think the last time that a Christmas... Oh, no. I think last year, it was sort of Christmassy. It's very rare that the song that is the Christmas number one is actually a Christmas-based song. Yeah. Sorry, I don't think any of the Beatles' number ones were Christmas ones. I think the second act to do it with the Spice Girls... They had three number ones at Christmas, yeah. Okay, the last one. Who plays the title role in the 2014 British comedy film Get Santa, which also stars Warwick Davis, Jodie Whittaker, and Rafe Spall?
Yeah, I've never seen the movie or even heard of it, so I have no idea. And so just to name any British actor, how about Benedict Cumberbatch?
Played Santa?
I have no idea.
Oh. It was actually... I'll give you this might not help you. He also played Santa in Arthur Christmas.
Doesn't help.
Oh, it was Jim Broadbent.
Never
doesn't help. Still doesn't help.
No,
you don't know Jim Broadbent.
No.
Oh, he's been. You'd recognise him maybe. He was in the last Indiana Jones film. He's been in a lot of stuff. He was in. Yeah. He was in Harry Potter. Okay, right now we've got some songs that were expertly hummed. I'll let you in on a secret, boys and girls. I was trying to hum the first one for Brian and I messed up so badly I just let him have it. So what's number one? What have you got?
Mele Kalikimaka.
Yeah, well done. Okay, number two. This wasn't really a single, this one. It's just a very Christmassy song. So from a couple of Muppets specials. What have you got?
Oh, I thought it was one of the themes to Polar Express. That's what I was hearing. The la da 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 da.
Which no, it's old friends, new friends.
Ah,
friends that will always be. It's called Together at Christmas. Okay, I know you got the next one. What's the number three?
That was I Want a Hippopotamus for Christmas.
Well done. Okay, number four.
Away in a Manger.
And the last one?
Underneath the Tree.
Yeah. Is that popular in the States? Does it get a lot of airplay?
Yeah, I think between it and All I Want for Christmas Is You, those are, you know, a lot of people were saying for a long time that our last great American Christmas hit was in 1998 with All I Want for Christmas Is You. There really hasn't been another one to come along and get, you know, really have staying power. That's not one of these disposable ones.
I think it was 94.
Was it 94?
I thought it was.
Could have been. But anyway, like a long, long time ago, right? The 90s. And I do an episode about that this year where we had an explosion of music in the 40s that not only was popular, but is still popular. And then, you know, the 50s and 60s did respectively. And then it just really drops off. The 70s and 80s, you really don't see much of anything. 90s, almost nothing. And, you know, it's been well over 20 years since we've had a new song come along that really just might be a new classic. And I really do think that Underneath the Tree is probably that song.
It's a good few years old now, though. It's got a lot of 4 or 5 years old, I guess, isn't
yeah.
it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it gets a lot of some airplay over here. Yeah. Okay, well done. So you scored a massive... What have you got?
I think 2 points, 3 points, something like that. Oh, do they all count? They're cumulative between the two quizzes?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think maybe 5 or 6. Not bad. I'll take it.
Will you?
Why not?
You ain't got a choice, I suppose, have you? That's it. Well, before you go, Brian, why don't you tell everyone about your book again?
And the good news is that you can get a copy in whatever format you prefer. There's an audiobook out from Recorded Books, narrated by yours truly.
Oh, well done.
You can buy it in... Yeah. And I'll have you know that the audiobook was named by Apple Books as one of the must-listen titles for November. So if you go to Apple Books, you'll see it featured there. But then you can also get hardcover if you like, or an ebook if you're a Kindle or Nook or whatever ebook kind of reader. You can find it wherever books are sold. Just look up Brian Earle or Christmas Past.
There we go. And while you're buying his book, why not buy Thursday Night's Alright by Jack Andrews, also available on Kindle. Thanks very much, Brian. It's been a pleasure having you on here again.
Yep, you as well. Merry Christmas to you and all your listeners.
Merry Christmas. Remember I said, right, that I had another present for my wife that I didn't mention then? I'm mentioning it now, right? This is what it is. It is the Christmas Cracker Joke toilet roll. So what I've got here is a toilet roll, and printed on the toilet roll are jokes. I haven't used it yet. I have not used this toilet roll. What I'm going to do is I'm going to do the joke each week, and then I'll use it. Okay? That's how it works, isn't it? I don't want to use it first and then read the joke off it. I can think of at least one problem with that, kids. Maybe more problems, but definitely one. So what I'm saying, I'm not going to go into it, actually. I think you understand. You know what loo roll's for, don't you? You know what you do with it. Tell you a little story, actually. Quite often, I've done it a few times. When I'm buying toilet roll in a supermarket, as it's going through the checkout and the girl scans it, or the man, could be a man, they scan it, I'll go, guess what I'm going to do with that? Because you know what you do with toilet roll, don't you? And they look at me, and they look at the toilet roll, and frequently they say nothing. No one's ever asked, no, what are you going to do with it? Because then I'd have to say, well, I'm going to wipe my backside with it. But I've never had to say that. Okay, so that's just an insight into what kind of life I lead. So, let's have this joke. Are you ready? Why is Christmas just like your job? You do all the work, and the fat guy with the suit gets all the credit. There you go, that's your joke. And now, I am going to use that joke to wipe my arse. Thank you. Bob's back, boys and girls. Bob is back with a brand new segment. I'm going to let him explain what it is, but I think I've sort of given it away a little bit with the jingle there. Here we go.
I don't suffer from post-Christmas depression, but I do hate the first months after the holiday. They tend to be cold, wet, and dirty. There isn't anything to look forward to. Plus, it's tax time in the U.S., so you need to gather all your personal information to prepare those tax forms. It's all kind of gray, without the color of Christmas. It makes you wish that you had some part of Christmas every day. Now, you can't have the full thing. You realize that problem if you've ever seen Elmo Saves Christmas or The Adventures of Pete and Pete. But maybe just a bit or a fragment every day isn't wrong, and it can lift your spirits. like a Christmas podcast that you listen to all year. I plan to give you ideas each episode to keep a little Christmas in your life. Now, if you have suggestions, please pass them on to Jack, and I will present them during the segment. I know that you have your own ways to celebrate and enjoy Christmas, even during those spring and summer months. Now, my first suggestion is to find a small, intimate space to add a festive touch by keeping your Christmas decorations up all year round. This will allow you to bring some holiday sparkle at any time of the year. In the past, I had a whole Christmas-inspired room, but that didn't last too long with my wife's hesitation and our family needs. So now I have my own closet where I secretly keep my Christmas items on display. Since it's my own space, I can be a little over the top. And whenever I get dressed, it's a bit of a seasonal celebration. Everywhere you look, there is some festive decor or accent to awaken a cheery holiday mood, especially when it's needed throughout the rest of the year. Now, there are no lights, but there's enough Christmas magic on display for my own enjoyment. I know that embracing seasonal inspiration throughout the year can create a warm feeling and evoke those happy memories that we all love at Christmas. You feel that same way, and so I am looking forward to your creative input.
What I love most about that is Bob's optimism that my two listeners are actually going to send some stuff in. So answer the call, listeners. Send in some ideas of how you can keep the Christmas spirit alive 365 days a year. It could just be like, right, dressing up as Santa Claus and going out and giving presents to everyone. It could be something as simple as that. Or it could be getting a load of reindeer, tying them to the front of your car, and then like letting them pull your car around while you're blasting Christmas songs out of the windows. It could be something, just something as tiny and as simple as that, okay? So send in your ideas. I'll pass them on to Bob. He'll read them out. We'll all live happily ever after. Now it's time for this.
Humbug.
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 Humbug. Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle? Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
Well, boys and girls, a bit of a treat for you now, because I'm doing one of the major versions of A Christmas Carol. Quite often, I'll do one that's just like an episode of a sitcom where they've done a Christmas Carol version. Other times, I'll do some offbeat cartoon version that you've never heard of. This is one of the big ones. This is from 1999 and it stars Patrick Stewart as Ebenezer Scrooge. It was just over an hour and a half long and it was a made-for-TV film. I think originally it was shown on Channel 4 in the UK and on TNT in the US. Before we get into this version, Patrick Stewart was already very familiar with the character of Scrooge and the story of A Christmas Carol. Back in 1988, he had a one-man show that he started where he performed the whole story and he himself performed 40 different characters telling the whole story. It ran for many years, on and off, and he's still been doing it as recently as 2019. He had a run in New York, still doing this one-man show. So this would have come out 11 years after he first started doing his one-man show of A Christmas Carol. Now, I'm going to go straight into it, and this is quite a by-the-book version of A Christmas Carol. However, the first scene is very different from the book. Now, we all know that A Christmas Carol opens with the lines, "Marley was dead to begin with." Well, with this one, Marley is dead, and it actually starts at his funeral, and there's not many people there, and this is someone mentions that. And what's interesting about this scene, there's a couple of things actually, but what stood out to me first off was Marley lived in London, and we know that because Scrooge moved into Marley's house after he died. That's written in the book. And I don't know where he's having this funeral, because it's in the middle of nowhere. It's like they go up this hill, this bleak hill. There's no town, there's no village even nearby. You don't see any houses, any buildings at all. So goodness knows where he had his funeral and why it was so far out of the centre of London. But like I said, there's not many people there. And they have a short conversation about the fact he's being dead as a doornail. And it's like how Dickens talks about it in the book, where he says, "I don't know why a doornail is the deadest piece of ironmongery." Well, if you listened to some of my old episodes, you'll know why we say as dead as a doornail. I'm not going to go into it now. Go and listen to the old episode. So then, straight after the funeral, it's only a short scene, but there it is, we follow Scrooge as he's walking through London. And then, as he goes into his counting house, it cuts in on the sign, Scrooge and Marley, and very similar to the Jim Carrey version from 2009, the sign warps and fades so that we see it as the time has passed like another 7 years, which I thought was interesting that it was used, you know, the same as in... Anyway. But what's a little bit annoying about this is you've got Cratchit in there and he turns to Scrooge and says, I was wondering, sir, after 7 years, if we'd change the sign. It's like, what? Why 7 years? Why today? Why 7 years? Surely he would have said it after a couple of months. Like, shouldn't we change the sign? 7 years later. It annoyed me a little bit, that bit. Not going to go on about it, but it just did. Now, Bob Cratchit is played by Richard E. Grant, and I'm sure you're familiar with Richard E. Grant, but if you're not, he's a very famous British actor. He first rose to fame in the film With Nail and I, where he played With Nail, and recently he's been in Loki, playing an alternate universe version of Loki. He's been in loads of other crap, though, but what bugs me a bit about him is he's incredibly posh. You ever see him being interviewed, he's a proper posh, lovey actor, and he's playing like this working class man, and it annoyed me. To be honest, he does a decent job of it, playing Bob Cratchit. If I didn't know he was Richard E. Grant, I'd think, yeah, he's a good Bob Cratchit. But because I know it's him, it sort of takes away from it a little bit for me, to be honest. But that's just me, I guess. So in comes Nephew Fred, and Nephew Fred is played by Dominic West, and I'm sure you're all familiar with Dominic West. He's been in loads of crap. He was in the TV series The Affair, and he was also probably most famous for playing Jimmy McNulty in The Wire, but he's been in loads of other crud. You definitely recognise him. He played one of the palace guards in The Phantom Menace, the Star Wars film. So yeah, he comes in, and that's a decent bit actually. The scene is, you know, another bit which I've talked about in the past. There's a line in A Christmas Carol where he says, Scrooge said that he would see him. Yes, indeed he did. He went the whole length of the expression and said that he would see him in that extremity first. I did cover this a few episodes ago, back in December. What he's saying there is he'll see him in the extremity, meaning he'll see him in hell first. And Scrooge says, I'll be damned first, which I thought was interesting that they actually did use that, because quite often that's brushed over in versions. So well done for that. At this point, one thing that did bother me a little bit is that there's very small changes from the dialogue in the book to in the film, and I think they're trying to make it clearer to the audience, like the language that's being used. I'll just give you a basic example. In the book, there's a bit where Bob Cratchit claps when Nephew Fred has given his speech, and Scrooge says, oh, you'll lose your position. And in this, they changed it to, you'll lose your job. And I just don't know why they bother changing that. You know, I think we all know what someone's position is, but they just decided to change that. And there's frequently throughout the dialogue, not just in this scene, but all throughout the film, there are changes. A lot of it they kept the same, but some of it they've taken, made it a bit, dumbed it down a bit, is what I'd say. And I think that's a shame, because I don't think they needed to, but there we go. Then in comes the portly gentleman. Interestingly, at this bit, Fred meets them. So Fred leaves and he sees them in the street and they're trying to find directions to Scrooge's counting house. I guess what you've got here is it's a very short book. So if you film the whole book as it is, it's not going to be long enough to make a full feature-length film. And it's interesting what they do in different versions to extend it. Now, in this version, just a couple of little extra scenes here and there. In the Jim Carrey version, for example, there's the bit where he's being chased through the streets by the horse in the carriage. So, yeah, I just thought it was interesting that they added that for no particular reason. The two portly gentlemen, who aren't particularly portly, come in, try and get some money out of Scrooge. Neither of those two are particularly famous, so I won't bother dwelling on them. We all know what happens there. Scrooge sends them off, and off they go. Then, this was interesting, because in the book, it does talk about a carol singer coming to Scrooge's door. In this one, there's a bunch of carol singers singing down the street, and one of them says, oh, I'm going to go and sing at Scrooge's door. And he goes and sings at Scrooge's door. Now, the song he sings is Good King Wenceslas, which is the background music that I play in this segment. You're listening to it now. That's it, beneath what I'm talking about. The reason I use that song is because that's what Bean Bunny sings in The Muppets Christmas Carol. That's the reason I chose Good King Wenceslas. What's interesting is that that song hadn't actually been written in 1843 when this film is set. And we know this is set in 1843, not just that the book was written then, but we know it's set then because it shows the date of Marley's death being 1836. And then we know that it's 7 years later, so it's definitely 1843. Good King Wenceslas wasn't written at that point. It was written 10 years later, 1853. So I don't know why they did that, because the song in the book is God rest ye merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay. What's annoying is, why not just use the song that's in the book? You know, it'd be in the public domain. It's not like they're going to charge you for it. So why go for Good King Wenceslas instead of the original God rest ye merry gentlemen? I don't know. Anyway, that's what they did. But it's nice that they had added that scene, because a lot leave it out, and in this version it's quite involved actually, because in the book it just mentions that Scrooge sort of reaches for the ruler and the kid hears that and runs off, and I think the kid's just singing the other side of the door. In this version, Scrooge actually comes to the door with this big wooden stick in his hand and the kid's all scarper. Yeah, that's actually the picture that I think you'll often see on the poster for this film. So then Scrooge leaves, we've got the face in the door knocker, that's there. What's really nice is that we've also got the face in the fireplace, of Scrooge's face appearing around the fireplace. This is something I think I've only seen in one other version, and I can't remember which version that was. It was a cartoon one I did sometime last year, and it's very, very rare you see that, so that was good that they added that. Then Jacob Marley comes in, and he is played by a chap called Bernard Lloyd, and can't really tell you much about him. I had a look on IMDb, didn't recognise any of the stuff he'd been in, really, or at least none of the characters he'd played in the things that were on there. So, yeah, he's an actor, I can give you that. He comes in, and it's an interesting bit where he takes the scarf off his head and his jaw opens really wide. And that's something that you see in a lot of versions of A Christmas Carol, where the jaw hanging down is like a real major thing. And I think we've discussed this before, but the reason Marley's head is tied with a bandage, it's because that's what they used to do to the bodies when you'd have them in the casket. Because otherwise, when rigor mortis sets in, the jaw opens and it's left hanging open. It doesn't look very nice. So that's why he'd have the bandage tied around his head. He takes it off and his jaw hangs really low, like it's computer generated the way they do it. And Patrick Stewart comes up and helps him close it. Now, there's the next bit here. It's something that you might not be aware of. And it's something that only really dawned on me recently, because in the book, Marley says, "I am here tonight to warn you that you have yet a chance and hope of escaping my fate, a chance and hope of my procuring, Ebenezer." Now, that's not what it says in this. It actually says this.
"I am here to warn you that you have a chance of escaping my terrible fate, a chance I got for you."
Which I think makes it a lot more clearer. And the reason why these ghosts are coming to Scrooge is because Jacob Marley has actually sorted it out to get them to come. And I thought that was quite an interesting thing. That I'm glad they changed that, because that does make it clearer. Because it wasn't something that I really was. I always felt like Jacob Marley was like warning him, and they'd sent him first because Scrooge would know who he was. But it's not that. It's Marley's there to say, "Look, I've sorted this out for you. I'm the one that's doing you this favour." I like that. I thought that was quite good, just because they changed that one word. And I know before I was complaining that they dumbed it down a little bit, but there's something about that that stood out to me, that's something that I'd never really noticed before. Anyway, that's just me. So, and then it shows the ghosts in the street. That's another bit that, you know, you don't always see, and I thought they did a good job with that. And then Scrooge goes to bed, and then we get the Ghost of Christmas Present. Now, the Ghost of Christmas Present is played by an actor called Joel Grey, and didn't recognise him at all, but he won an Oscar for being in Cabaret, the film Cabaret, you know, with Liza Minnelli. So I was quite impressed with that we had an Oscar winner on there, one that I'd never heard of. He's 90 now, and he's still acting. I was checking his IMDb, and he had credits from last year. So good on you, Joel Grey. He turns up. Interesting how they done him. You know, he's got like a sort of long wig, got like a glow about him, and they sort of blurred out his face a bit, so he looks a bit more ethereal. Not really like in the book, but, a decent way of going about it. I didn't mind that. They take him back to the school he went to, and this is a bit annoying. Fan comes in, his sister. She's not called Fan, is she? She's called Fran. Right? They changed it. So it's like Fran, short for Francis, rather than Fan, short for Fanny. Because people are like, "Oh, he said Fanny. Oh dear, that means bum in America." Yeah, it means something else in the UK. The front bottom. Yeah, that's what it means. Yeah. But no one's complaining, you know, normally. Although in this version, clearly they were. So they changed the name to Fran, just to stop it being about a bum. Right. Yeah, that seems decent. They, you know, do a fine enough job on that. Then we go to the Fezziwigs. And the Fezziwigs are played by... Mr. Fezziwig is played by a chap called Ian McNeice. And he's been in a few things. He played Winston Churchill in Doctor Who in a few episodes. And also, he played Fulton Greenwell in Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls. I think he's the guy that comes to see him at the start. And I don't know if you remember that bit when Ace Ventura is in a monastery and this guy's like, "I need your help." And, yeah, I don't know. Anyway, you might remember. You might not. Who cares? And his wife is played by a lady called Annette Badland. And I remember her from being in a TV show, a kids' TV show called Happy Families from the 80s. She's one of those actresses that you'd see all the time in loads of different stuff. She's a plump lady, and she obviously plays a plump lady in loads of different things. But I remember her from that kids' show when I was little. Interestingly, she also played the Fezziwig character, or at least the lady that Fezziwig's wife was based on, in The Man Who Invented Christmas. So how's that for typecasting? That seems decent enough. We've got Dick Wilkins in there, which is nice to see him. He was played by a chap called Matt Cottle. And if you're in the UK, you'd probably remember him from the TV series Game On, which ran for 3 series and had Samantha Janis in it back in the 90s. He's been in a lot of stuff as well, but that's the one thing that I always remember him from. So that seems fine. Belle turns up and they're dancing later on at the party. And then we see him and Belle splitting up. And Belle is played by Laura Fraser. And the only thing I knew her from was Breaking Bad and also Better Call Saul. She played a character called Lydia Rodart Quayle. And I don't know if you remember her. She was, I forget what her job was, but she was a bit of a baddie in it. And she, in the last episode, Walter killed her with ricin poisoning. He put it in her Sweet and Low or something. There you go. So that's Belle, very beautiful woman. And just before the Ghost of Christmas Past leaves, he's holding this cap, which is for putting out a candle, and Scrooge grabs it and puts it over his head, which is the same as in the book. I think the only other time I've seen that, maybe once before, but definitely in the Jim Carrey Christmas Carol. But so it's good to see that as well. Well done for putting that bit in there. Then it's time for the Ghost of Christmas Present, and he looks the part. He's played by a chap called Desmond Barrett, and I looked him up on IMDb, and he's got very little on there. So even though I thought I recognised the actor, nope. Don't know what he's been in. Well, I do, because I looked on IMDb, but nothing stood out to me. There's a little bit here at the start I didn't like. Now, this happens in a few versions, where Scrooge still stays curmudgeonly throughout the night as he's been taken around by the ghost. In the book, it's not like that at all. You know, like, he softens from the minute he's taken into the past. He's got, like, a tear on his cheek. In the book, it says this. "Spirit," said Scrooge submissively, "conduct me where you will. I went forth last night on compulsion, and I learned a lesson, which is working now. Tonight, if you have aught to teach me, let me profit by it." Well, this is what Patrick Stewart says as Scrooge.
"Spirit, take me where you wish. I'd like to get this over and done with."
Yeah, so as you can see, he's still a moody old git. So now we go straight to Bob Cratchit's house, and that's a nice one. They stay pretty close to the book in that one. Cratchit's wife is played by an actress called Saskia Reeves. She's been in loads of stuff. I definitely recognised her, but from nothing specific. That seems good. Tiny Tim's there, and Tiny Tim is played by a young man called Ben Tibber. And although he's not been in a huge amount since, he also played Tiny Tim the following year in the modern day version of A Christmas Carol that starred Ross Kemp. I don't know if you've seen that. It was talked about on an episode of Merry Britsmas podcast, so you might want to check that out. I will cover it at some point, but I haven't covered it yet. Again, another one who's been typecast. Look, one nice bit about this scene at the Cratchit's house is that they go and get the pudding from the copper, and you see Mrs. Cratchit fishing it out. I thought that was good. They did stick pretty close to the book in that bit. Then they go to all the other places. So what happens is Tiny Tim starts singing a song. He sings Silent Night. In the book, it says he sings a song about a little boy lost in the snow. In this one, he's singing Silent Night. And then it goes all around, like it does in the book, to loads of different places where people are singing Silent Night and enjoying Christmas. So you've got like a lighthouse, and then you've got like a coal mine, and then you've got some French blokes on a boat at sea singing Silent Night in French. And it's interesting because you can tell this is made for TV, because it cuts in one bit, it like fades to black while they're singing Silent Night, and then it fades up again while the same people are singing Silent Night. And it's like, oh right, that was an advert break, was it? Well, I missed that. Maybe I want to see different types of coffee I could buy. Maybe I want to buy a new car. It's Christmas time. They got all the big guns there, haven't they? Maybe I want to watch the John Lewis advert or the Sainsbury's advert, which is also usually very good. A little aside here, that song, Silent Night, shouldn't really be singing that, because that wasn't translated into English until 1863. So yeah, maybe they should have chosen a different song for that bit. There you go. Right, where was I? Oh yes, then we go to Fred's house, and so there's a bit in it where they're playing Blind Man's Buff. Are they? Because in this, and this is annoying, right? Topper calls it this.
"Let's play Blind Man's Bluff."
In the book, it's called Blind Man's Buff. That is the name of the game. It was originally called Blind Man's Buff. Some people call it Blind Man's Bluff because they're making a mistake. That's what goes on. Because buff is like a push or a shove, and that's where it comes from originally. Do you know what? I could go into it. It's quite interesting. There's different versions of Blind Man's Buff. This version they play, not only do you have to catch someone, you have to, once you've caught them, you have to sort of like touch their face, maybe grope them up a little bit, just to try and figure out who it is. If you don't get the person correct, you have to carry on trying to find someone else. But in this, it's obvious that, like it is in the book, that Topper can see through the blindfold. And I've got to say, Topper is a sleazy git in this. Like, proper sleazy. The way he talks, the way he... Oh, it's terrible. Terrible. I don't know what Betsy sees in him. If it is Betsy, I forget. He's played by a chap called Crispin Letts, and I think really sort of more of a background actor. I couldn't really find any proper roles that he'd played majorly, but you've got him sleazing away in this one. Also in this scene, one of the other guests is Celia Imrie. If you don't know Celia Imrie, she's a very attractive lady, really quite posh, you know, she's got something about her. She was also, like Dominic West, she was in A Phantom Menace as well. She plays like a starfighter pilot. She was also, you might know her from The Best Marigold Hotel. She's in both of those two films. And she was in Calendar Girls. She's been in loads of stuff. She did a lot of work with Victoria Wood while she was still alive. Yeah, very famous actress, Celia Imrie. She's in it. Not a big part she's got, actually, which is interesting because she's one of the more famous actresses they've got in this film. So then they leave, and then they come back again to watch him play Blind Man's Buff. And then they leave and they come back again. They don't actually go in the second time to listen to a song that used to be Fran's favourite song. Or fans, if you want to get her name correct. What annoyed me about this scene is they didn't play the 20 questions game, you know, where Fred can only answer yes or no and they're trying to guess what he's thinking of. And I think that's more pivotal than the dirty game of Blind Man's Buff or Bluff, where Topper is trying to grope up Betsy. I don't know what they were trying to show with that, but that was the choice they made. And then we go to the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. Now, what's interesting about the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come is he's not a ghost, he's a Jawa. From Star Wars, yep, and he was in The Phantom Menace as well. Incredibly tall Jawa, I might add, though. If you don't remember the Jawas, they were like hooded figures with the little glowing eyes. This is what they sound like. Yeah, he doesn't sound like that, interestingly. I don't know what happened to this Jawa, apart from the fact that he's like had a massive growth spurt in his teens, and now he's towering over your average human. He can't speak, so that's a shame. Although it might not be a Jawa, but it's a Jawa. It's as good as a Jawa. If it's not a Jawa, it might as well be a Jawa. Shall I stop saying Jawa? Now, with this bit, they take him to all the scenes that are in the book, pretty much. Yeah, so you've got, like, overhearing the three men talking in the street about the fact that someone's died. We don't know who it is. We know it's Scrooge. Going to old Joe's place. Interesting, the characters at old Joe's place. You've got Liz Smith plays Mrs. Dilber. And she was very famous in a TV show in the UK called The Royal Family. But she was in loads of other stuff as well. But she also played Mrs. Dilber in the George C. Scott version of A Christmas Carol. So another one who's been typecast. You've got Mrs. Dilber in the same one, Mrs. Fezziwig, played twice, and also Tiny Tim. I thought that was quite interesting. You've got the washerwoman, who's played by an actress called Elizabeth Spriggs, and she was in a show called Simon and the Witch, which was a TV show that was quite popular in the late 80s in the UK, but she's been in loads of other stuff as well, dozens of different things. And interestingly, she was in Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, and do you know what her character was in that? Are you ready? The Fat Lady. That was her character. That's what it says on IMDb. Fat Lady. Isn't that nice? And old Joe is played by a chap called Trevor Peacock. Now, he was an actor throughout his whole life, had a lot of work, but he only really gained proper fame when he was in The Vicar of Dibley, and he used to talk like this.
No, this.
That was him. And another interesting fact, Liz Smith was also in the one who played Mrs. Dilber. She was also in The Vicar of Dibley as well. Yeah, so that seems good. They do a decent job of that. Then we see the shrouded body, which you don't often see in versions of A Christmas Carol. Some do, some don't, but, you know, you see the body covered in the shroud and Scrooge has got to peel back to see what it is, but he doesn't have a look. Then you see another scene, which is also, you see it sometimes, but very rare, very rare. There's a couple that are happy to hear about Scrooge dying because they owe him money, and the fact that he's dead means they won't have to pay their debt, but by the time they do have to go around to paying the debt, they'll have the money to pay it, so that's nice. You see Tiny Tim's body. This is something that you always see the Cratchits being sad about Tiny Tim dying. You don't often see Tiny Tim's body, and Bob actually goes upstairs and there's Tiny Tim laying there, dead. And then we go to the grave, and Scrooge actually falls into the grave. And then Scrooge wakes up, and of course, he's very happy. This is weird, because the idea is that he hasn't laughed in I don't know how many years, right? So he's going to laugh, and this is his first laugh. But because he hasn't laughed for so long, it's like his body doesn't know what's happening. And I'm going to play that for you. This is the noises he makes. Listen to this.
Ha ha ha!
I thought that was a bit much, that scene. They didn't need it. I thought it was weird. But I'm sure Patrick Stewart was very proud of himself. We see the boy out in the street, and does he say Walker? No, he doesn't say Walker.
You're jossing.
I know. He doesn't say it.
You're jossing.
No, I'm not jossing. Actually, the word is joshing. And I'm not joshing.
You're jossing.
I'm not joshing! That's what he says. He says,
you're jossing.
Which comes from joshing, apparently. I'm not sure how true this is, but I looked up jossing or joshing, and apparently there was a chap called Josh Tatum, and in 1883 he noticed that nickels minted in that year were almost the same as $5 gold pieces in terms of size and design, right? And they didn't have cents written on them anywhere. So he and a friend began to electroplate these coins and pass them off as $5 pieces, and they made up a big old fortune before they got caught. So there you go. Yeah, so what he'd do is he'd go into shops with these dodgy coins and he'd buy something that was less than 5 cents and he'd give them the $5 coin and they'd give him the change from $5. But the idea was that he could say, no, it's their fault. They gave me too much change. I just give them a 5 cent piece. But knowing that he was trying to make them look like $5 pieces. So there you go. That's possibly the story of why we say you're joshing. But, you know, the boy in the street shouldn't have been saying that if it originated in 1883. I was a bit annoyed about that. You know, it's like, why change it? Do you know what I mean? Just say Walker. Doesn't matter. No one's going to get upset if you say Walker. But this guy's going to get upset if you don't say Walker. I'm upset. Then they buy the turkey. They send that off. And Scrooge goes round to Fred's house. And this is a good bit as well, actually. This is one of the bits they did well. Scrooge is outdoors and you see him outside. You can sort of hear voices inside all having fun of that, and Scrooge is walking back and forth outside, and it says that in the book. It says, he passed the door a dozen times before he had the courage to go up and knock, but he made a dash and did it. And that's nice, that is, because you don't see that in many versions. But what's not nice is that they missed out the whole bit where Scrooge in the street sees the portly gentleman from the day before and says, oh, can I give you some cash? So, you know, got to take the rough with the smooth with this version, I guess. Then the final scene is obviously Scrooge and Bob Cratchit. Scrooge says, I'm going to give you a raise and all that lot, and that's nice. And then there's a very final scene where all the Cratchits are gathered round on Scrooge's doorstep and he picks up Tiny Tim. And that's the other picture you might see from the posters, is Scrooge holding Tiny Tim. So that's it. That's the end of the film. Generally, I like this version. I watched it when it first came out back in 1999. I remember that vividly. My main complaint about it back then was that I felt like it was a bit dark, a bit dismal. I think then I hadn't seen a full version of A Christmas Carol for a long time, since I was a kid. And the one I think I had seen was the version with Albert Finney, and the redemption at the end of that, when he's dancing and singing in the streets and there's all the toys and it's bright and colourful, is completely different to the end of this one, which is more similar to the book, sadly, where it's a lot more subdued. And I would have liked to have seen a bit more colour and a little bit more excitement at the end. But, you know, generally, it is a good version. Aside from where they've changed a few words here and there, generally, it stays pretty true to the book. So you've got to respect that. I think Patrick Stewart does a really good job of Scrooge. There's a few decisions they made that I wouldn't have made, which I've talked about. But generally, if you've not seen it, you should go out and watch it. It is a very good version. It'll take up an hour and a half of your time. And if you want to watch it, it's on YouTube. So, you know, you can see it for free and watch the whole thing. So, yeah, that's this episode's version of A Christmas Carol. I'd say it's one of the modern classic versions, and it is worth a look. Now it's time for this. Yule Lugs, Yule Lugs, you'll love them, I'll love them, we'll love them, we all love the Yule Lugs, the Yule Lugs, the Yule Lugs, those Yule Lugs, yeah! Do you know what, this time, actually, I've also got to play this. Here it comes. This is what we call. Because this is the Fraggle Rock Yule Log, which came out just this last year in 2022. So, here we go. The scene itself is not just the fireplace, it's actually the whole room. So you've got Sprocket asleep on like a dog bed or a cushion to the side. You've got the fireplace in the middle. You've got a Christmas tree to the left. Above the fireplace, you've got a wreath hanging on the wall. You've also got a Hanukkah menorah, and a Kwanzaa Kinara as well up on the mantelpiece, which I thought was nice. And then just to the left of the fireplace, sort of hidden a bit behind the Christmas tree, is a Fraggle hole as well. So that's the scene, and there's two windows either side of the fireplace, and you can see snow coming down in the background. The snow is on a loop of about 20 seconds, I think, and I think the fireplace is on 20 second loop as well. So Sprocket's there sort of snoring away a little bit, and this is what happens as you're watching the scene. So you've got Gobo, he comes out, looks at the tree and sort of wakes Sprocket, so he runs off. Then you've got a Dozer comes out as a look at what's going on and then disappears. Then you see Uncle Travelling Matt outside the window. Yeah, that's nice. Then Sprocket stirs a bit and he hums a few bars from Jingle Bells. Then Gobo comes out, just pokes his head out of the Fraggle hole. And then Gobo steals a bauble from the Christmas tree, and this wakes Sprocket, so he runs off. Then Uncle Travelling Matt, he's all tangled up in the Christmas tree, comes out and he like, pulls a lot of the lights out and steals a gingerbread man. So now the lights on the Christmas tree are off. A little Dozer comes in, Dozer, and he turns the lights back on. And then Sprocket is humming in his sleep, Jingle Bells again, and Gobo comes out and sort of dancing while he's singing, humming Jingle Bells. Then another Dozer comes out, and this time a crane lowers down a gingerbread man to replace the one that was stolen by Uncle Travelling Matt. Then Uncle Travelling Matt comes and dances around a bit with his gingerbread man in his hand. Then the lights go out on the wreath, the one above the fireplace, and a Dozer comes in and a crane comes down and lifts the wreath up and then puts it back down and the lights are back on. And then Gobo comes out and admires the tree and says,
"Happy night of the lights, everybody."
And that's it. And it's all right. You know, I'm not a massive fan. We've discussed this. I'm not a massive fan of the ones that aren't more focused in on the fireplace. This is not a Yule log for your home. This is a Christmas scene for your TV, really. That's how I look at it. Nice, though, because I always like the Fraggles. It's always nice to see them. It's a shame I haven't seen Night of the Lights. I haven't got Apple TV. Maybe it'll pop up somewhere else on another streaming service. But I am a big fan of the Fraggles, and I would like to watch that episode. So, yeah, if you've seen it, let me know what you thought of it. But that is this episode's version of the Yule log. That loop, all the bits I talked about, was about 20 minutes long. They've actually taken it down from the Jim Henson YouTube page, but if you want to watch it, other people have put it back up, so you can just chuck it on if you want to have a gander. If you don't, then don't. That's how it works, isn't it? Right, now let's do this. This episode's recommendation is a podcast called Rock Paper Swords, the historical action and adventure podcast. And this is what it says. Best-selling authors Matthew Harvey and Stephen A. McKay chat about writing action and adventure stories, diving into some of the more quirky and unusual aspects of history with a detour through music and its role in their process. Each episode covers different exciting themes, often with brilliant guests who help shed light on what Matthew and Stephen have decided to talk about that week. Here's a trailer for their show.
Hello, my name is Matthew Harvey.
My name is Stephen A. McKay.
And together we are the hosts of Rock, Paper, Swords, the historical action and adventure podcast. Every fortnight we'll be speaking to you about all things historical and anything that falls under the banner of action and adventure in books, film, TV and games. And we'll even talk to you about some rock music sometimes too. First episode is on the 1st of July. Don't miss it. We hope to see you then.
So this podcast is ideal for anyone who's interested in historical fiction. Both the presenters are historical fiction authors and they chat with other historical fiction writers as well. Now this podcast came to my attention because I actually got an email from Stephen McKay mentioning their Christmas episode and saying that he'd mentioned me on it. So I had a listen. I listened to a couple of episodes of the show and then I listened to their Christmas episode and it just is fantastic. It's about an hour and 10 minutes long and they just talk about the history of Christmas going back to the winter solstices from millennia ago. So highly recommend that episode to anyone listening to this podcast. If you like Christmas, you will definitely enjoy that episode. And then if you like historical fiction, go and check out their other episodes because there's plenty on there. And again, all very interesting. The episodes I listened to, I learned a lot and I really enjoyed them. And I don't actually read a lot of historical fiction. So yeah, highly recommended. I'll put a link on the show notes and I'll also put a link on Facebook. But I think if you check that out, you really will enjoy it. Later in the year, I do hope to have Stephen McKay on. He sent me a copy of one of his Christmas books and come sort of later in the year, hopefully I'll get him on and we can have a chat about it. But in the meantime, check out Rock, Paper, Swords, the historical fiction podcast. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. And that is it for this episode. That was it. I'm back. Here I am, doing my thing, living my life, talking about Christmas and loving you. So, I hope you enjoyed it, of course. If you want to get in touch, I would love to hear from you. You've got my email address, probably. If you haven't, it's totalchristmas@gmail.com. The website is totalchristmaspodcast.com, and I pride myself on the fact that I haven't updated the website in about 2 years. Just a little aside here, we talked about, back in December, Bob Baker talked about how in the US you say Merry Christmas and in the UK we say both Merry Christmas and Happy Christmas. And do you know, another aside from that actually, which we didn't cover back then, the poem, "'Twas the Night Before Christmas" or "A Visit from St. Nicholas" to give it its correct title, at the end of that poem, Santa actually says, "Happy Christmas to all and to all a good night." It doesn't say Merry Christmas. So I thought that was very interesting, bearing in mind that it was written in the US. But anyway, going back to what I was saying, after Bob's segment, I got a few emails from people, and at the end they signed off, "Merry Happy Christmas." And I thought, you know what, maybe I should start doing that at the end of the podcast. Instead of saying Merry Christmas, I should say Merry Happy Christmas or Happy Merry Christmas. So I'm going to do it this episode. If you don't care for it, you can email me and say, do you know what, I didn't care for that. I wish you hadn't done that. You ruined my day. Or if you did like it, you can say, do you know what, I really enjoyed that. You've changed my life, Jack. Thank you. It's the most wonderful thing I've ever experienced. Whatever, you know, if you want to send your thoughts in, do so. So are you ready? This is me saying goodbye. You ready? You know I love you. Merry Happy Christmas.
We have spent $40 million on a live TV show. You guys have got an ad with America's favorite old fart reading a book in front of a fireplace. Now, I have to kill all of you.